Blog Talk Radio.
Love Power Experience, your community science class. This is Yah Elohim, Yellow Rhythmic Seed. I haven't said that in years, and the time is now. We are going to bring forward the natural time affirmation into the program. This is the third or fourth incarnation of 20 almost years of being on the air for Yah Elohim in different forms, this time in the blog form, not for the first time. So we're glad you're here. Thank you for coming. This program is for posterity. I'll talk more about that just naturally as the program progresses, but I do want to thank everyone who is listening, everyone who has listened, and everyone who will listen. That entrance music was I Forgive Me by Charles Holt. Thank you for that, Charmaine. So what we're going to be doing this evening is moving forward with our exploration of mental and physical and emotional well-being. What we are going to specifically be looking at this evening is a continuation, first, of our exploration of the entheogens. We got through most of them, but we do want to pick up a little bit at the for the end of the psilocybin. We're going to listen a little bit more to Khalid Lindy Iyi, and then we're going to look at Iboga and Ibogaine as viable solutions for our well-being in our community. Are they viable, or is it just another form of taking drugs and escaping? So we get to look at the topic and make our own decisions. We're also going to look at organizations that exist here in our community, globally, domestically, that address the issues of Black emotional and mental health. Look at some of what's being offered. There are trainings out there for those who want to increase their skill set. And then we have organizations where we have to look critically, think critically, and discuss whether they are a part of the solution or part of the problem. And I don't have the answers. My task, my goal, my mission of love is to bring to the community these topics for examination, exploration, and observation, and then we make our own decisions. We don't even have to agree as a community. People, sometimes within families, we don't agree. I do want to say that we are losing the ability to think critically, and that's why this program exists. All the archives of all the different programs that have existed over the past 20 years are being compiled by me, Yah Elohim, into an archive, because we are losing the ability to think critically and to even form certain ideas, because the concepts are being removed from our consciousness. So what we want to do is have a record. And this program serves as that. It serves as a record of what has occurred, what is occurring, and what will occur. Because we know that all is now and that it all happens now. So we're going to start it with the actual outline of our program for this evening. And that, as I said, is re-examining the entheogens. And remember, the last 15 minutes of the program, let me remind you that now before I dive in too far, you can call in and ask your wellness questions. And you can call in at any time, 516-387-1233. 516-387-1233. We also have a chat room that's at blogtalkradio.com/ You Are Sustainable Community. The letter U, the letter R, and Sustainable Communities, one word. That'll get you into our chat room. So we're going to start, as always, we have what we call the hot topic. The hot topic is generally not directly related to the topic of the program, but it's something that came up, piqued our interest, that we thought would be of interest in general to the community. Something we know, something we want to share, something we didn't know too much about. So today's hot topic actually falls in the latter category because we want to talk about the vagus nerve. So the person speaking is from Asia, and they pronounce the V as a W. So just wanted to give you that heads up. What is the vagus nerve? What does it do? Let's find out a little bit more about that.
Science has acknowledged a mind-body connect as early as 1872. The Orient has had the knowledge of this important connect for thousands of years and has succeeded in developing some powerful techniques to help modulate the mind through the body and vice versa. The human body is a miracle in action. The human nervous system is made of more than 100 billion nerve cells. The nervous system relays information from the brain to the body and back. One of the most important command central for bidirectional communication between the brain and body is the vagus nerve. A nerve probably 99% of the population never heard of nor have a clue of its location. So what is the vagus nerve? Vaga in Latin means to wander. This nerve wanders around the body, impacting major organs. This being the longest cranial nerve, it controls all involuntary body processes such as breathing, speech, swallowing, heartbeat, blood pressure, hearing, taste, circulation, digestion, and gut health. It also controls bladder movement, orgasms, and fertility. A healthy vagus nerve allows us to access the parts of the brain responsible for creativity, higher cognition, and complex decision-making. In the absence of a healthy vagus nerve, we only end up having access to parts of our brain that control primal instincts like fear and fight or flight response. Hence, a healthy vagus nerve is essential for leadership and decision making. The functioning of the vagus nerve can be impaired by stress, anxiety, poor lifestyle, smoking, drinking alcohol and overworking, lack of exercise, proper nutrition and sleep. When the vagus nerve is not able to perform to the best of its ability, the body and mind become susceptible to a range of diseases like depression, anxiety, obesity, cardiovascular disorders, hypertension, diabetes, digestive disorders, chronic inflammation, kidney malfunction, infertility, and even Parkinson's. Doctors have started stimulating the vagus nerve with electric impulses from a device that increases its activity to help with diseases like depression. However, there are natural ways to stimulate the vagus nerve as well, such as breathing, pranayama and meditation, exercise, yoga, omega-3 and probiotic-rich diet, singing and chanting, splashing cold water, laughing, hugging, massaging. One of the most effective ways of vagus nerve stimulation is through breath, a powerful breathing technique that has positively impacted millions of people around the world is the Sudarshan Kriya Yoga, taught by the Art of Living Foundation. When one undergoes Sudarshan Kriya Yoga,
so that's the vagus nerve. And what this basically is saying that this nerve starts in the cranium and it travels around the body and it impacts almost every organ. And it also impacts the involuntary processes in the body like breathing and hypertension, blood pressure, etc. So it goes to say that a healthy vagus nerve then gives us the ability to be to have better blood pressure and just less stress and a better all-around way of dealing with life. So Google that or look it up. See what you find out about it. That's today's hot topic. So what we're going to do is we're going to move into the very end of our conversation about psilocybin, the renowned and acknowledged master of psilocybin and mega doses is a brother, Kalindi Iyi, and he's quite prolific and quite articulate about his position on psilocybin as a tool for our mental and spiritual well-being, as well as the necessity for spiritual warriors who are willing to delve into these realms. So we're going to take a little bit of time this evening and just finish up with Kalindi Iyi for about 8 minutes or so. And that will be the end of our discussion of psilocybin. Take notes and remember, you can always access this program on the show page, blogtalkradio.com/URSustainableCommunities. That's the letter U, the letter R, Sustainable Communities, all in one word. This is Kalindi Iyi.
Steve Englehart and Frank Brunner in 1974 were in an apartment being, you can't do nothing. You know, what, you're going to work 10 hours a day for 60 years to sit down and die? That's a great life. Or are you going to stand when you want to come to this conference that you don't have to get on a plane and fly 5 hours to Dublin, stay in Dublin for 15 hours sitting in a chair, then come to the Breaking Convention conference running down the hallway to get here? No, you want to come to Breaking Convention, you just go ding-a-ding-a-ding and boop. You know, okay, I'm ready to give my lecture. You know, or we do the conference like this. We all Friday night at 11 o'clock take 30 dry grams of psilocybin mushrooms. We lie down in the dark. And we all meet up in a place in the hyperdimensional realms and have the conference there. And the conference, you know, we have great food, great times, you know. You don't have to worry about sitting in a chair. You can just be floating in the lotus posture, you know. This is my vision. Beyond the human being, beyond what we are now. So when we first encountered these mushrooms on the Sahara and ate them and said, oh man, this is something different, you know. Now let's make some more sophisticated tools. Let's, you know, let's make a wheel, you know. You know, I've been envisioning this building. It's, you know, it's wide at the base and it goes to a point. What are we gonna do with it? I don't know, but let's make it. But most folks don't know that the Merkut, or what do we call the pyramid, is a time machine and a teleportation device. That, you know, for teleporting to different spots. Well, that's another lecture. Man's relationship with cattle, because these mushrooms are prophylic. They grow on cow dung. And Africa has the oldest unbroken hallucinogenic use of mushrooms on Earth. I was in South Africa year before last. They have 300 different types of entheogens just in South Africa alone. 300 different types. Some will kill you. Some will kill you. You know, that's why I'm a psilocybin guy. I don't get into a lot of the exotics. You know, they say take this one, but only take this much, because if you take this much, you know, you're dead as Lincoln. I'm going to go through this real quick. Okay, mandalas. Because we have to deal with mnemonic downloading and uploading into devices. We have the technology. We can, you know, they're making the $6 billion man. It was 6 million in the 70s, now it's going to be 6 billion. But we have the technology. We have the technology in mandalas. When they took this mandala and three-dimensionalize it, this is what they got. Because that's where all those Buddhist saints live at. Now, they'll tell you, of course, nowadays, you know, no, we don't do hallucinogenics. That's not the way we do it. But there are some that still do. But this is the place of learning. This is the place that the ancestors lived. the Persian rugs, the magic carpet. Each one of these is a different place. Each one is a different world that you can go into. If we look at, that's the Cenobite puzzle box. Puzzles, labyrinths, all those things are places of information. They're places. They're not just things to look at or play with. And of course, you can go to, I don't know if they have Toys R Us here, or Kids R Us. They have kids, Toys R Us, Kids R Us, Toy Store. Well, you can go and buy one of these $9.95 Cenobite puzzle boxes, and with 30 grams of dried mushrooms, I can guarantee you that Pinhead and the rest of them will come out of there. Kemet or Egypt has a very developed secret pharmacological entheogenic culture inside of it. That's the secret of Kemet, of Egypt. That's where they got how to build pyramids and Tekken and all those different types of things. They brought back what they saw in their sojourns by utilizing the tree of life, which was the sacred acacia, which was DMT, mixed with the Syrian rue, also the sacred mushroom, also the lotus with some other things mixed with the lotus. They downloaded into the macro world what they saw in the world of the heavens. And so when they saw these things built in light, out of light in the hyperdimensional realms, they came back and they built their civilization around what they saw in their sojourns, and they built out of stone and granite what they saw in light in the hyperdimensional realms. So Wasir or Osiris or the Lord of the Perfect Black, the one who is the master of the underworld, represents the underworld that the mushroom mycelium grows in, the land of darkness, the underworld, before it springs into the light. So this is a representation of a psilocybin mushroom on my right and Ansar Wasir Osiris on the left. He's in his mushroom form because it's the knowledge of the dark world, the underworld, that Osiris brings in all of his majesty and understanding and things like this. This is the undercap of the psilocybin mushroom, the circle within the circle. This is a glyph. This is a glyph that is dealing with one particular family. This glyph is Ra. This says Ra, R-A, or Ra, whichever way you want to call it. You can transpose the vowels. What one family, the family of Ra, how they chose to clothe themselves in reality, which was downloaded from the transdimensional realms into reality in ancient Kemet, which was Egypt. That's where you get the pleated skirt, pleated clothing. You see, the ancient world, the ancient Greeks wore pleated skirts. The ancient Kemetic people wore pleated skirts. The ancient Mesopotamians wore pleated skirts with tassels, and so on and so forth, because that represented the technology of certain clothing. Clothing is information. It wasn't just for being on your behind so that you wouldn't be naked. No, it means different things. I'm a traditional warrior in my village. If the hat is this way, it means something. If it's worn to the left, it means something else. If it's worn to the right, it means something else. If it's worn to the back, it means something else. Women wear two skirts. Certain places, other places, different technology, but two skirts. That's so you know that the woman's married. Because the second skirt is what you take the skirt and tie the baby on the back with. So you know that the woman with two skirts, you got two skirts, she's married. So you don't mess with her. You don't go up, hey, honey, what's your name? Because she got two skirts on. Or her head tie, which is part of a woman's secret society, the Gelede society, according to how she's tied this head piece, gives information on, you know, I'm looking for a husband. No, I'm married. I got a husband. I'm getting rid of him. You know, so it's all different types of information that can be dealt with for clothing. The pleating clothing is the clothing of the falcon. It's falcon clothing. It means the wings of the falcon, the folding and unfolding of time. That's what it means. And it's utilized for just that purpose. In war, in martial arts, entheogenic warfare, the pleated skirt is utilized to, when the person throws a punch at you, the skirt is whipped in a certain direction, and that slows down time. It slows his punch down. When you go to punch, you turn it the other direction, and that speeds your punch up so he can't get it. And then there are certain movements that you do that stop time altogether. This is all part of the entheogenic process that was utilized to deal with that type of warfare, spiritual warfare. Because in Africa, we don't separate spirit from everything else. Everything you do is spiritual. It ain't no, we're gonna go to class tonight and do the lotus posture or the dead dog, or we're going to church and sing a hymn. No, everything you do is spiritual. When you go to get a bucket of water, that's spiritual. The most spiritual thing you can do is farm. They say, do you meditate? Nope, what do? I plant beets and potatoes. That's spiritual. There's no better meditation than you standing there hoeing the weeds out. You got to concentrate so you don't hit your foot. You have to make sure that no weeds are left. Everything is spiritual. So we don't separate the spirit from the matter, the spirit from our work. Khalil Gibran said, work made visible is spiritual. Paraphrasing. Work made visible is spiritual. So, to move quickly, this is the glyph of Ra. It says, Amen Ra. Ra is the circle within the circle. Okay. Don't even worry about that. I'm going to talk. How much time I got left? 5 minutes? Okay. I can do it all in 5 minutes. So what I'm saying is that we're in the middle of a singularity. The last 100,000 years has been a singularity. We think it's been a long time, but it's been only a blink in the time as far as our relationship and the Earth's relationship to the rest of the universe. So it's only been like that. We've only been human like that. So we're in the middle of a singularity. We're in the middle of a movement. And each and every one of you are at the forefront of that movement of us becoming something different. So as I said at the first breaking convention conference up the road in Canterbury, I said, we need to take more. We need to be responsible in taking that more. In other words, you don't just jump into 30 grams, you incrementally move that way. And there's nothing wrong with coming back down if you have to. And there's nothing wrong with never doing that if that's not what you're here to do. But for those people who have the wherewithal and the tenacity to be able to go into the higher doses, I think that is the way to go. So psilocybin as a tool of exploration, because we need more Dr. Stranges, as I said earlier. We need those who are going to encounter those beings in the multiverse and sojourn with them for knowledge, for power, for understanding, and bring those things back and say, hey, you know, I saw a djinn named Ulba who was powerful. He tried to trick me out and trick me into killing myself, but I'm still here. He's not. But this is what it's about. It's about becoming more. In Africa, although many things are still secret, has been at the forefront of this movement of the progression of the human into the next level since we became human. And I think that this movement is moving forward. I think that there'll be a lot of difficult times, you know, because the ayahuasca thing is going kind of, you know, it's becoming kind of touristy and things like that, and, you know, the tourist doses and things like that. But people who are serious, who are dealing with this type of medicine and changing their lives with it, I think it's a very positive thing. But psilocybin is different. It's a whole different animal as far as the journey is concerned. There's no bottom to it. You can't get to the bottom of it. Nobody knows what it is. There are no experts. You know, I've been doing it more than 40 years, and you know, last year they threw me a loop. You know, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to take 35 grams and it ain't no big deal. I'm moving up to 40 and things like that. But it threw me for a loop, you know. And I'm no different than anybody else. I'm not the badass and all that kind of stuff. I'm just a person who wants to know. And I'll make the sacrifice to know what this thing is about. But never think that you got a handle on it. That's all I'm saying. Each one is different. And you can do it 40 years or 50 years and think you got a handle on it and lay down in that bed in the dark. And the next thing you know, you down in the basement looking at the wall saying, what happened? You know. So I don't have any more time, but thank you very much. I appreciate you.
So that is Kalindi E. What's your perspective on that? He's definitely talking from a different perspective. Are we evolving into another being? Are we in the middle of a singularity, moving from one state of existence to another state of existence? Is this just someone who has made a career on a drug, based on a drug? What's your perspective? 516-387-1233. Also, is this viable? Is this a viable solution or tool for our community in general, for that average person on the street? That's my question. So we're going to move quickly along because the time is passing so quickly. I cannot believe that we're at the bottom of the hour already. But we want to move into Iboga. And this is the end of our sojourn into the entheogens. I want to say that the program is scheduled to go for 2 hours, but essentially I try to do it in about 90 minutes, and anything that's not completed just goes over into the next program. So this Iboga part was actually scheduled for the previous program, but we had so much information we didn't get to it. So we are going to look at Iboga. I'm going to first just go to Wikipedia, and it's a perennial rainforest herb, a shrub, I should say, and that they use the word psychedelic, and it's native to Central Africa. It stimulates the CNS, the central nervous system, when taken in small doses, and in larger doses, it causes hallucinations. Where it is in the parts of Africa where it grows, the bark is chewed for various pharmacological and ritualistic purposes. We'll listen a little while to a Westerner's initiation into Iboga. I think I have that available. So what they've done in the West is extracted the active principle, ibogaine, and it is used to treat substance abuse disorders and depression. However, it's not legal in the United States. So about 6 years ago, when we were looking at this previously, we did a program on ibogaine. Let me see if I can. Okay, I got to get that page back up. Oh, here it is. And so we're going to explore that for a few minutes and then look into some more current information. We're going to hear from someone who, as a substance abuser, used the ibogaine and what their experience was. So we're going to start with a few minutes of looking at Iboga and ibogaine in 2013. Ya Elohim.
It is this experience which shamans for thousands of years have taught their children to experience. For DMT creates not only a sensation of physical liberation, but also spiritual liberation. Through the use of plants which contain DMT, shamans teach that you can once again develop a strong relationship with the spirit world. The most abundant supply of plants containing DMT are in the rainforests of South America. Is this why the Illuminati corporations are destroying the rainforests? This ancient relationship between your soul or spirit and the powerful manifestations of earth spirits has been suppressed by modern city-dwelling lifestyles and watching too much television.
Absolutely. The suppression of the knowledge of the plant messengers. One of the things he really neglected to say was African, and we really prefer to use the word psychedelic versus hallucinogenic. That's a term we don't use because hallucinogenic implies that what you're seeing isn't real. But psychedelic means you're moving to another frame and focus of the brain and the brain's ability to perceive. So we don't want to necessarily use the word hallucinogenic, or if we do, just convert it, mentally to another word, which is psychedelic. So that is the intro. And we want to now move into our conversation about Iboga and Ibogaine. Well, this is the age of Google, so it's not hard to find information about plants or in pretty much anything, even though, of course, it's tailored and limited a certain way. But if you want to know about Iboga, you can simply Google Iboga or Ibogaine, and you can also go to Wikipedia, and Wikipedia has a great definition or explanation about what it is and the fact that it is native to Western African. They call it, again, they use that word hallucinogen, and it's a perennial rainforest herb, perennial as we know from our sustainable liberated community. Our gardening is that's something that grows over and over again. If it comes back every year, if you cut it, it's going to come back. So it is native to West Africa. And what it does is it stimulates the central nervous system when taken in small doses. And when taken in larger doses, it induces visions. The root bark is chewed for pharmacological and other purposes, ceremonial purposes. And Ibogaine, which is the active alkaloid and which is used in addiction treatment, depression treatment, et cetera, is also used to treat, as we said, addiction, substance abuse disorders. Now, Ibogaine is a member of the tryptamine family, that same family that DMT, which we were alluding to in the clip, is a member of. As a matter of fact, if you look at the book DMT, The Spirit Molecule, and you go to the pages in the 32 to about 36, and you look at the molecular structure of the different psychedelics, which there are two families. One is the phenylalanines, which of which mescaline is one of the most prominent, and then the other are the tryptamines, which contain a larger family of hallucinogenics like serotonin, LSD, psilocybin from the mushroom, etc. All of these are various forms of tryptamines, and tryptamines have tryptophan, which is an amino acid at their base. So all of these substances that I just named are very similar biochemically. They only vary by an atom or two, the placement of an atom or two. And when they're metabolized, they actually are metabolized into the same substance in the body. These are all plant substances, and this is the molecule. Again, this takes us, again, full cycle to DMT, that allows us to move into other dimensions of consciousness, as well as move into our relationship, greater relationship with the plant messengers. So culturally, the ibogaine arise out of the Bwiti culture. It is the central pillar of the Bwiti practice in Gabon, Cameroon, and Republic of the Congo. They use the ibogaine or the iboga in many ceremonies. It is taken in massive doses by initiates, and it is taken on a more regular basis in connection with rituals and dances. It is used to enhance stamina. It is a stimulant, especially at night. As always, which it is, you know, the people practicing their indigenous culture, their indigenous religion, suffer persecution at the hands of those who feel that they don't have the right to do that. So we know that's historically the case. It's almost always the case, and it is the case again with the iboga. The suppression of the iboga, the earlier clip was talking about, you know, the rainforest being cut down and the ayahuasca, the DMT, you know, in the largest number of DMT containing plants are in the rainforest of Latin America. However, this whole iboga that comes out of Western Africa has already come into the U.S. and been suppressed in turn, and so it's happening globally. It isn't just one part of the world. Wherever healing plants arise and messenger plants arise, they're suppressed. They're healing and messenger plants that exist right in the Americas, the North America continent. We know South America is full of them. So the structure of ibogaine, the active component of iboga, is very similar to that of DMT. Now, when we're dealing with psychedelics, and we talked a lot about this when we talked about ayahuasca, there are certain factors that are very important, and setting and the substance, okay? So the use of the substances is very important to be done within the cultural context. This is not a recreational experience, and it is not for everyone. And there's a certain amount of preparation that is emphasized by experts or those who have taken these journeys more than one time that is very important to alkalize the body, to become less dense. It's very important to become less dense. It's very important to start to look at the emotions and what is being suppressed, held within the tissues and the organs. And we will definitely talk more about that and provide more support. But please take note, this is not to be taken lightly. These journeys with any of these substances, I cannot emphasize it enough, with ayahuasca, with salvia, with iboga, with the mushroom psilocybin, Amarita, any of these substances, it's not to be taken lightly. It is not to be diminished and used recreationally in a culture where people feel like they want to get high or they want to trip. It is very important that they are done within context, and the preparation, the inner and outer preparation, is done. These substances were provided to initiates in order for people to be initiated. They go through a certain set of ceremonies, rituals, and preparation to become initiated before they actually move into working with the plant messengers. It's very, very important who or what is in our environment when we are moving and working with the plant messengers. natural or urban, indoor or outdoor, the quality of the air and the sound become so important when you move into working with the plant messengers. Harsh sounds or polluted air or foul odors, they become much more exaggerated as our senses expand and we are become so much more present with all of what's happening within our experience. Now, for example, as an example, there were quite a few trials done with DMT as well as Iboga. And they're placed in Ibogaine, and they're placed in certain settings that are not conducive to the cultural framework in which these messenger plants arose. The culture in which they arose is essential in the experience. So what we want to do is imagine just for a moment that we're in some clinical setting with someone telling us they're about to inject us or subject us to a particular drug while they take notes and observe our reaction. And even in the most compassionate setting, if it is not consistent with the culture, then we know this is a quantum universe, and we know that that setting greatly affects the experience that the person taking that journey is having. So we want to take a moment and listen to a Bwiti shaman. Let's listen to an expert, someone who knows a lot more than I do. And he's going to share with us his perspective and what's the difference between Iboga, Ibogaine, and why it is so important to utilize the cultural context. A Bwiti shaman.
Everyone, today I'm here with Mugenda. He's a Bwiti shaman who performs Iboga.
I'm actually going to put that on pause, but because we are moving forward and we have to fit everything into the program. But I encourage you, you can hear the entire program on blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. That was a complete 2-hour program that was done about Iboga and Ibogaine by me, Yah Elohim, in 2013. So moving on, we do want to look at Ibogaine. Is it a viable treatment for any and everyone? Okay, that thing is still playing. Hold on. Okay, is it viable? We know that Iboga, as we already said, that it is a plant containing the entheogenic substance Ibogaine. And I want to take a moment to say, because I spoke in the 2013 clip about terms, and you know, I was very concerned about which term to be used, and that is important, but the term that of preference is entheogen, not hallucinogen, not psychedelic, because those two words have a certain connotation, as we said already. The entheogenic plants, the ones that are the plant messengers that allow us to take inner journeys that help our mental and emotional well-being, which is the overall topic of this program. How do we improve our mental and emotional well-being? Substances, organizations, procedures, or practices exist here and now that increase our mental and emotional well-being, our emotional literacy, our ability to communicate. That's the overarching topic of the program. And right now, for the past 2.5 programs, we've been looking at the plant messengers. We're closing that out now with our conversation about Iboga and Ibogaine, and then we're going to be looking at other organizations and techniques. But to answer the question, is it good for everyone? Iboga or the Ibogaine derivative, which is, of course, illegal in the United States, by the way. So nothing is for everyone. Nothing is for everyone. This is about looking at the various tools and substances and opportunities that we have to look at what is available to us. I'm just doing the research, some of it, and bringing it to the community, but each and every one of us still has to know ourselves well enough to know if this is an experience or a tool that is for us. We ask a little bit further in the program, is it for children? So what's your take on that? We do know that Iboga is very much been documented to cure or drastically reduce addiction, alcohol, crack, heroin, in one treatment. It can overcome, help people overcome addiction to the opiates, morphine, methadone, Vicodin, Percocet, OxyContin. And this, just think about this epidemic, opioid epidemic that the United States is experiencing at this moment. Yet, and still, they are close to the solution, one possible solution. So you cannot use this substance legally in the United States. There have been some successful trials, but essentially you would have to leave the U.S. You can get it in Central America. You can get it in Mexico and other places. So that's my answer to the question. It's not for everyone, but it is a viable alternative for some. So, but let's listen firsthand to someone who actually used the substance, and let's hear what they have to say.
Are you asking about the Ibogaine experience?
I think, yeah, in specific. I was just curious what that looks like. The minute someone takes their dose, does something kick in immediately? What are they experiencing?
It takes about 40 minutes to 1.5 hours actually kick in. And we administer a tiny dose first to see if there's any allergic reactions and also to prepare the body to receive the medicine. And it starts slowly, generally with a sensation of warmth surrounding the body. And that's when patients feel the relief from the withdrawal.
Really?
Oh,
it's immediate.
Wow.
What's going on there when they feel that warmth?
So, it's a very complex process. It affects about 50 different neuroreceptors. So it's not, you can't really tease apart like what a person's feeling from precise effect on a single transmitter system.
So it's at that point where they start feeling less of a desire to do these drugs and things.
Yeah.
Addiction starts to...
Mm-hmm. You kind of let go, but then, you know, the actual visionary state experience starts, which is more of a waking dream state.
Mm-hmm.
So when you close your eyes, you have this very vivid imagination, and you have a thought, and that thought becomes a picture. And it's subtle at first, but then it starts building and building and building until you're in this fully immersive 3D experience that when you close your eyes, you're able to access your subconscious and go back and explore different areas of your life that you consider important.
Oh,
some people go back to the moment of conception or watch the different stages of human evolution or
do a rebirthing thing.
Yeah.
People do that.
This is fascinating. Do most folks find it to be a peaceful process when they're in it or reflecting after looking back? At the time, can it be a stressful thing for people?
It can be a stressful thing for people.
Hmm. So what's important to know about Ibogaine is this is a very long journey, and this does separate it from many of the other sacred medicines on the planet. Ibogaine, again, it depends on who's administering it and the dose and the intention, but for us at Crossroads, you're looking at a 12 to 18-hour experience. So it starts at nighttime. You take a test dose followed by 2 or 3 more capsules depending on your body weight and your addiction type and what the doctors have decided for you. And then there's 4 phases of Ibogaine in total. There's 2 phases in that first night. So in that first phase, as Dr. Polanco is saying, it's a pretty intense visionary experience. So just to give you kind of an idea to answer your question, Kate, when the medicine starts to kick in, you'll feel this warmth take over your body. Yes, you might start to have auditory hallucinations. So you might hear buzzing in your ears. Many sounds that are not there. For me, it was kind of like a jackhammer at some points. That's kind of hard to explain. You'll feel a tingling maybe coming over, a vibration of your whole body. And this is kind of the intense part of it, is the whole body starts to kind of vibrate. You might feel your consciousness just falling in space or rocking or spinning, and your body becomes ataxic. So you are laying in bed the entire experience. So for 12 to 18 hours, you are hooked up to a heart monitor and a pulse
oximeter,
and you will lay there all night, really not able to move much. If you move, you become very nauseous and start throwing up, and it feels like the whole world is coming up with you if you did try to sit. Really? So you're laying in bed through the duration of the night, and you go on a journey through these visionary experiences. To me, it's like you're navigating the deepest parts of your psyche and really opening up mental files that you didn't even know were there. And then that can last for 6 to 8 hours as you go through this visionary experience. People often describe having some kind of life review. Like Martine says, starting at conception, people have even told stories of past lives or seeing things maybe their ancestors have experienced as they speak about old times before they were on this planet. And then they'll see memories all the way through their childhood and up to the current point in their life. And it's amazing because some of these memories have obviously left a person unsettled. They will see little things or big things that they did not realize were impacting them, or maybe that there was some stored negative energy or emotion around those experiences. So it allows a person to relook at a past situation and make linkages between their psychological health now and that experience that happened when they were younger. So they're allowed to have some healing and re-narrate that experience. And then past the visionary phase, after 6 to 8 hours, it can depend, they'll move into more of an introspective stage in that same night where the visions might start to calm down or subdue just a little bit, and they can start to process everything that they just witnessed. So in the visionary stage, you can see just, so many images. They're coming at you so fast. It's kind of like frames of images that are flashing in your mind. It's really hard to make sense of all of it. And so then the second half of the night is an opportunity. You're still in treatment and sometimes very heavily, but you can start to choose where you want to navigate in your mind and what you want to look at and start to make connections and breakthroughs and insights on what your human experience has been so far, and again, why things are the way they are.
So you can be more conscious and start choosing the sort of direction you want your life to go in terms of the addiction and things.
It sure seems like that. In the beginning phases, it can just be so, an automatic experience that's just happening to you. And in the later phases, you can start to think about what you've seen and choose what to focus on.
So is this all tapping in,
So a couple of comments here. It was good to hear what her experiences were, but again, it takes us forward to the context. This was a clinical setting, and there was really no actual preparation for the, it doesn't sound like it anyway, I wasn't physically there, and I don't know these people, just listening to how the conversation is going, it sounds like there was no real detoxification or internal preparation for the journey. Yeah, they were an addict, and they went to this clinic, wherever it is, and they took this substance, but it was frightening, and there was a lot of negative connotations that bring us back to the cultural context and the setting and the substance. So what's your perspective? The phone number is 516-387-1233, or you can log into the show page on blogtalkradio.com/ You Are Sustainable Communities. The letter U, the letter R, Sustainable Communities, all one word. So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to start to look at some of the organizations and trainings and other, well, let me do this first before we shift. We want to talk about using these substances with children, because essentially the whole conversation has been in the adult context. Can any of these entheogens, DMT, ayahuasca, psilocybin, or ibogaine, and many of the others that we haven't mentioned, can they be used successfully and harmlessly with children? Well, first and foremost, in every Western country, these substances are illegal, with the exception of the Brazilian ayahuasca churches. The only place that we could see, both through our cursory research into this topic, is that the children and adolescents that are part of the Brazilian ayahuasca churches do consume ayahuasca. So outside of that context, we could not see that it exists anywhere in the world. If it does, it's probably a part of secret societies in context and in a sacred setting. So it is not secularized to be something that someone else would know about, an outsider such as myself. And so the other question is, are these substances currently legal? And essentially, I have a whole lot of sites, I'll put them in the chat room, that talk about what's legal and what's not legal. Essentially, DMT and ayahuasca are considered the same drug or same substance, and it's only legal where DMT is legal or where ayahuasca is legal. Psilocybin, You can look on Wikipedia. There's about 4 countries in the world that psilocybin is legal. One of them is Jamaica. I don't remember the other 3. And then ibogaine. There was no Western country where ibogaine is legal, but I do believe Canada and Mexico are doing trials, and there have been trials in the U.S., and that they're opening up in Canada and Mexico with the ibogaine. So where would we get access to these substances if they're so helpful? Because if you live in the U.S., U.K., or EU, most of these, and many other countries, but specifically those countries or groups of countries, these substances are considered Schedule 1, so they're illegal. So the only way you could actually access it that we know of is to go to countries where they are legal. So we'll put into the chat the site that gives you the list of those countries, and that's where the journey would have to begin, unless you just choose to take it up on your own wherever you are. So that is the closing of our information on the entheogens. Feel free to listen to the previous 2 programs and this program about the topic, as well as the whole series of about 8 programs that was done in 2013 on blogtalkradio.com/quantum-evolution. So we're going to take a short break, and then when we return, we are actually going to start to look at the practical tools and organizations that help us increase our emotional literacy. We're going to be taking a completely different perspective. So we're going to take a quick break with some music, and then we'll be back. Thank you.
You were tearing on my heart. Tell me, what is the plan? Tell me how to heal my mind. Tell me how to walk this land. You were tapping in the nighttime. You're tapping all day long. Maybe I am the song of freedom. Am I the voice of so many men and women and children who love one another? Men and women and children who sing for the river's men. Women and children who sing for the mountains. Men, women and children who sing for the hungry men, women and children who sing for the dying men, women and children who care for all people, men, women and children. Again.
So that was the great Charles Holt tapping. And, of course, one of the things we're going to actually talk about, I don't think we're going to get to it this evening, is tapping, the emotional freedom or energy field tapping that is actually quite useful in increasing our emotional literacy, in discharging negative emotions and blockages. So stay tuned to future programs to hear more about that. What we're going to talk about now is to look at, as I said before the break, the practical tools and organizations that help us increase our emotional literacy. The program goes to 9:30. The last 15 minutes of the program is Ask the Health Practitioner. If you have any questions about your health, your well-being, mental, emotional, if you want to ask about nutrition, herbal product, something that you're doing in terms of your well-being, Dallas, 516, let's get the number, it's 387-1233, 516-387-1233. blogtalkradio.com/URSustainableCommunities. You can ask your health or well-being question, spiritual, mental, emotional. If you're on a program, if you're taking an herb, if you want to ask about any aspect of healing. We don't cure anything because we're not talking about disease. What we're talking about is well-being, nutrition, and nourishing ourselves on all levels, including the emotions. So one of the things that's coming up is one of my favorite organizations on the planet is Aya Educational Institute. And they have a series that they do called Healing Oppressions Wounds and Warrior, Healer, and Builder Workshops. These workshops occur around the country. The Aya Educational Institute is based in Atlanta, Metro Atlanta, Georgia. And if you go to their site, I actually put it onto the show page as well, that they're actually doing a training on healing oppression wounds in Washington, D.C., coming up in October. It's the 2019 schedule. It's the Warrior, Healer, and Builder. And you can basically Google that. They have the schedule up on Blogspot. And they have in August and October trainings. They have Saturday retreats on developing healing oppression wounds. So working with the community, increasing your literacy in working with our community, our ability to communicate with each other, within ourselves, to be able to have greater clarity about what our emotional needs are, and so that we are able to voice that non-judgmentally, non-blaming, and in a healing and safe way. So I encourage us to look towards attending these retreats. They are going to be, I would imagine, these would be in Atlanta. They have a 3-day coming up, 25th through the 27th in Atlanta. They have Black Love Couples Day Retreat in Lake Tahoe coming up in September. So just I'm going to put this into the show page, and you'll be able to at least tap into the information. And they've got links on there for you to be able to register. This is Aya Educational Institute Warrior, Healers, and Builders Workshop, formerly known as Healing Oppression Wounds. I'm going to put it in the chat right now. So you can get it at blogtalkradio.com/URSustainableCommunities. I'll just paste it into the chat, I think. Okay. I got to figure out another way to get that in. Let's try it one more time. So in the meantime, when I play a clip, I will work on getting those in. So there's another organization. Had a conversation, long conversation today about this organization because I feel that we have to have some discussion around the topic and the constituency of some of the organizations that are used to address our mental and emotional well-being. And I'm certainly not intending to attack anyone, but we have to use critical thinking and initiate the conversation about how we all work together in the Black community, because we're not homogenous, and even beyond the Black community, because at some point we also have to have conversations with people outside the Black community. So there's an organization called the Black Emotional and Mental Health Collective. I will put their information into the chat. They have some trainings coming up. They seem to be mostly based on the West Coast. However, we can also access what they have to offer here. So I'd like to, once I put their information into the chat, I'd like to get your insight on what you think about the organizations in our community that are LGBTQ, and where do they fit into the, you know, fit in? And where do we fit in? Do we have a conversation? And what do we do about that? So I'm of a generation, I'm trying to post it, but it's not going in. So when I play a clip, you know, I'll work on the technical part of getting those websites in. But you can actually just go to Black Emotional and Mental Health Collective trainings, look at what they have to offer, because they have really great workshops that help us connect with our community and have the conversations with all aspects of our community, children, elders, seniors, adults, and youth. So where, and I don't know the answer to this question, I'm asking for your input and insight. 516-387-1233. Where do the organizations that support LGBTQ fit into the Black emotional and mental health conversation? I'd love to hear from you on that topic. So in the meantime, we're going to we got about two more minutes because we want to take time to look at the wellness question for this week, and we're going to take the last 10 minutes of the program to do that. So the next thing we're going to move into is an organization that is not a Black organization per se, and it also has been criticized a lot by the Black community, but I feel that it's because we don't really totally understand what this is about, because it is not about forgiving white folks for anything. So it's the radical forgiveness. And so I have a short piece on that that I want to share, and then we'll talk about that, and then we'll move into the wellness question of the week.
Grab a cup of coffee and start your Sunday with Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life.
Oh yeah, I was supposed to clip that and I didn't. So I think I'm not even going to play that. We're just going to move on and start to look at the next topic. And you can also Google Radical Forgiveness. It's a program that really has more to do, but I can talk about it for a few moments before we move on. It has not to do with forgiving other people per se. It starts with the theme of the song that opened the program, which was I Forgive Me. It has to do with forgiving self. And it has to do with the contract that two souls take on in order to learn how to become more loving. It isn't about forgiving externally. It has nothing to do with that, because forgiving externally cannot happen until inner forgiving happens. So they have a few free tools. that you can use, and they're basically little worksheets that you can download off the internet at radicalforgiveness.com. And what you do is you work through your narrative. You start at your state of victimization. So the victimization is something like, it could be any topic under the sun, but they're always accusing me of things I didn't do. That would be a victimization type statement. So in radical forgiveness, you actually start with your victimization. And if you need to, you can write it out. They always are accusing me of things I didn't do. Okay? And so you start the process of really writing out, okay, specific things that happened that lend credence to your narrative. Okay, well, Jimson, when I asked him about going to this event, he said he was going, but then he didn't go, and he said it was because something I said changed his mood. Okay, and so you start to write out all your little narratives about why people are saying that you're doing something you didn't do. And you start to look at the pattern that runs through that. And if we are honest and we're discerning and we look at the same life review that we were just talking about in the entheogenic experience, and we start to do life review, we're going to see the thread that runs through that. And we're going to start to see how we are creating that experience over and over and over with other people or other situations or other scenarios to give us a chance to give credence to our narrative that they're always accusing me of something I didn't do. And we start to see how we are creating this situation in our lives simply by looking at ourselves, looking at our patterns. And sometimes it takes writing it down, and sometimes it takes starting at the victim state. So there's a way much more to it. We may review it a little bit more for the next program, but we're actually running out of the space to look at it further in this program. But in the meantime, radicalforgiveness.com. What we're going to do when we pick up next week, we're going to look at various other tools. There's also the Center for Nonviolent Communication. How do we communicate? That's very important. How do we take blame and accusation and judgment out of our conversations? We're going to talk about difficult conversations, being able to talk about what's uncomfortable, and also being able to listen. We're going to talk about co-counseling, where we can sit down face-to-face and counsel each other and develop the tools and skills to be able to work through a lot of what happens in our community. There are definitely important places for the professionals in mental and emotional health and well-being. As lay people, as grassroots people, there's a lot that we could do for ourselves, just like in our physical healing. There's a lot we could do for ourselves. So this is the premise of this program. Remember, the overarching topic is our mental and emotional health, our emotional literacy. How are we able to communicate with each other? How are we able to communicate with ourselves? How can we have sustainable long-term relationships if we're not able to communicate? So these are specific tools and means and methods across a spectrum of possibilities. You jump in where it fits for you. The same entheogenic experience that we talked about for 2.5 programs can also be achieved through fasting. So it's not so much how you get there, it's about getting there. So we will be looking also at the emotional freedom technique, energy field tapping, that is very helpful to the point where the local government here in Fort Lauderdale offers free classes on EFT. So, you know, that's something we can tap into and bring it to our community. There's lots of other tools. So we will spend a little time looking at that. We're also inviting people to be our guests on upcoming programs. We have mental health professionals that we have invited. So we can talk to the professional about how and what we need as a community to increase our literacy and to increase our communication. We're going to have grandmothers and mothers come and talk about their experience with their children and mental and emotional health. We're going to have people who have been diagnosed with various disorders come live and talk about how they manage, how they cope, and what are the solutions that work for them. This is not going to be the topic for the entire program for the entire year, but one thing we do do is we go well into depth about any topic that we're talking about. So we got down to 5 minutes in the last, in the was supposed to be the last 15 minutes of the program. And so the topic is Ask Your Practitioner. What we're going to talk about today is about the importance of play. We all need to play. Play is the other aspect of work, and it is what balances us out. So we know that not long ago, you could just send your children outside to play. You didn't even have to know exactly where they were. That's the way I grew up. I was in a community, in the context of a community, I could range far and wide. People knew who I was, and everybody kept an eye on everyone else. So what we must do now is recreate that sacred, safe environment for ourselves and for our children and grandchildren and the unborn generations to be able to incorporate play. If we don't play, if we don't balance the work that we do with unstructured, as in unstructured, activities that we are just allowed to flow, then we develop that imbalance. So we want to have free time to get away from all these devices, including this computer that I'm using right now to broadcast this blog program. Get away from all these devices and just go out in nature. It sounds like a no-brainer, but you'd be surprised how many days can pass where we or our children are inside, except moving from the building to the vehicle, the vehicle to the building. So remember, we don't have to compete. It's really not about competition. We could work together. We take that competition model, which is a model that is kind of a Eurocentric model that comes from lack and that we have to defeat each other and put each other out of business. But the whole aspect of it is we all complement. If I'm working in wellness and you're working in wellness and he's and she are, even if we're doing very similar things, there's no competition because we all occupy a frequency and we're going to attract to ourselves a like frequency. We could all be making food and each attract to ourselves a vibrant clientele and work together to buy the products and services that we're using. It's so many ways that we can collaborate and not compete. Be a leader and then sometime be a follower. Let someone who's quiet and low-key lead in their own way. They might not be a stand-up on the soapbox type A like Mama Ya is, that's going to be directing people. They could have a very subtle way. Allow the quiet people to come forward and follow them. See how they lead and follow them. And just don't micromanage ourselves or others. When we're playing, let's just be free and play. Also here, the county, Broward County, is offering very low-cost classes on healing through play, art, and crafts. That's another great tool that can be used to increase our emotional literacy and our ability to listen to ourselves and others, which is just another way of saying our emotional literacy. So that is very important. Remember to schedule, if you have to schedule it, schedule playtime, recreation time, free time, unstructured, no competition. Let the quiet people lead. Let the children lead. They have so much wisdom. Arts and crafts are very healing. We can heal without even talking It's very powerful. Work with color, rhythm, sound, energy. So this is our assignment for this week, to put more of that into our lives. This is Yah Elohim saying thank you so much for being a part of your community science class. This is the Community Love Power Experience, and we are your community science class exploring the entire cosmos and beyond. And right now, we're looking at mental, emotional, and spiritual balance, healing, and well-being. And that, of course, would include the physical. We're going to exit with Freedom, Ricky Byers Beckwith. So we did our West Coast stuff this week. Thank you for coming. Yah Elohim, love you to life.
Everyone needs to be free. eso lo quiero sentir dentro de mí, pero a veces ni se puede sonreír. Pero madre me dijo, mijo, no te agüites, busca la libertad, la tienes adentro del alma. Busca la calma, deja que crezca más grande que palmas. No sigas fama, eso no es vida, pídele a Dios y nada será falta de esfuerzo. Mama, I'm on, we don't feel well, I'm not alone. I know you feel me, you can be strong. Put that in gun, put that in drugs. Help out your neighbor and go raise your son. Go be a leader, student and teacher. Be the same thing you talk about as preacher. Do that right now in the name of your freedom.
Freedom, freedom. This is a song.